Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies and the Law, brought to you by Americans Restoring America. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't want to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. However, thoughtful, insightful, and educated as these opinions and these thoughts might be, much you might take away from these calls, at the end of the day, they are still just people's opinions. Just people saying what they might do, were they similarly situated to you, and nothing more. All right, on to the next subject. We can go over a couple things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, I'll take everybody to the homepage of Your Remedies in the Law, www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner, you see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it, otherwise blank page. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. On the left is the jurisdictionary course. Essentially, this is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its very high win rate, national win rate, in most traffic cases throughout the country. And of course, that's what it was popularly acquired for, but that's not why we've got it up here. The reason that it's up here is once you've gone through your jurisdictionary course and you get into the common law default process, you'll realize very quickly that it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. A lot of the key pillars that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, you now get to essentially enact in real life. And, of course, you know, being that it is primarily used for traffic scenarios, that's what it's most popularly used for. Folks feel a little bit more comfortable with trying that for their first time, given the obvious that traffic scenarios are usually on the low end of dire importance when it comes to any type of legal scenario. So folks usually feel a little bit more comfortable and trying their hand the first time with the common law default process. And, of course, with having such a national high win rate, it makes it for a perfect real-life homework assignment. Now, both of these items are very generously set asking for a very small contribution of $250 for the jurisdictionary course, and $150 for the common law default process. And so we encourage you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. All right, on to the next subject. Go over the grass fire communications, formerly known as statewide communications. And that's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every website that we have. That is 100% free. Tell your friends, tell your family about it, pass that along. Essentially, it's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. You've got a very easy-to-use setup wizard. You know, put your name in here, click next, put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it gives you a very healthy list to choose from of different topics, ranging anything from IRS matters to credit card issues, home foreclosure, health rights, on and on. If you can think of it, you'll find it in that list. And then, of course, it'll ask you, to pick a radius, if you will. You know, how far away from home do you want to, do you want that circle to extend to? And by the time it's all said and done, much how some folks would think of a social media. Of course, nothing like social media at all. It's very custom, very private. But much how folks would think of a social media, it puts you in contact with folks right there in your local area that share the same interests as you. Of course, the idea here is to put the power of communication and the power of education back in the common man. Let's suppose you jump on there and you say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first person comes back and says, well, I don't agree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, as thoughtful as a comment that might be, it's probably not going to help you very much in your fight. But maybe the next person comes on and says, well, you know, I also don't think that's fair, but I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse, go to the law library. Every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. I'd look up these terms, and then I'd watch this YouTube video. Well, now you're starting to get somewhere. Now you're actually, doing something that's going to, possibly, help you and along your process. Maybe the next person comes along and says, those sound like great ideas. Also, I'd pick up this educational material over here, maybe go through this course. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're getting down to the meat and potatoes of it. And so that's all we're trying to get folks to do here is sign up with Crossfire Communications and just start talking with one another. And as I said, of course, there's no charge for that. All right, next subject here, America for Restoring America. Of course, every time you go to your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up, asks you if you want to continue on to the website you're requesting or stop for a moment, check out Americans Restoring America. The reason we've done that, very simply, we're trying to get folks to explore. Your remedy has many different information providers talking about many different topics, many different educational materials. And then Your Remedy is only one of a dozen and a half websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit there for you to check out. We're hoping that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether we have an information provider that could assist you with your particular scenario, you can always give us a shout here. You can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Of course, you can always email me directly if you'd like. That email address is mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. Get back to you as quickly as possible. All right, if you have not done so yet, also pick up a membership for Your Remedy Is in the Law today or tomorrow, whatever your earliest convenience. Also, a very generous proposal, just asking a very small contribution of $10 a month for that. All these calls are recorded. We've got years of just a vast wealth of information and knowledge and experience you can go back through. You've got many wonderful other tools and options there at Your Remedy that all come with that membership. Of course, if that's not an option yet for you, you have freedomsradio.com. Every one of these calls are broadcasted out every night at freedomsradio.com. So you'll never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. You don't get quite the one-on-one that you get by being a full member, but we did even put the little blue box there that you can type in your question or quick, maybe type in a comment. And we do our best to read those out over the air. And so, again, you still get that a little bit of interaction there. Again, there's no charge ever for Freedoms Radio. All right, starting to
caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider here at True Remedy, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with an information provider. Info providers pay for advertising at True Remedy. That expense, that would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expense that would be associated with your particular educational process or information provider's time. And so that brings us to the big question of, well, what is your refund policy at True Remedy? What is your credit or your refund policy? There is none. If there was going to be any type of a credit or a refund, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But I can tell you, even then, it's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider's time or educational material. All right, winding down here, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always remain civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. I hear somebody there lurking in the background. Who's that?
Well, that would be Michael Edward, and I will be bringing the call in tonight and bringing forward Brother John. This is going to be a very interesting conversation tonight we're going to have. But let me just posit a question first. What group of people brand their critters? Cattlemen? Yep. Horsemen? Yep. Well, cattle branding is used as identification for livestock by farmers and ranchers. Branding is a placement of a mark on an animal by destroying the hair follicles and altering hair regrowth. From a welfare perspective, branding is not the preferred method of identifying livestock. Other methods, in particular, are devices such as an ear tag or, in other places, a social security number. Without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to the pointed of our spear, Brother John.
Well, thank you very much, both Martin and Michael, for your kind and gracious introductions. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening we're going to chat a little bit about Social Security. Social Security originally, there was a slight hint of nobility in the concept in that the government was going to create a retirement plan for anybody who wanted to participate that suggested that they had some constructive returns on the investment. And up until 1981 through 83, there were those retirement accounts were individual, and you had some legitimate expectation that the funds that you were dealing with had some level of protection. And to that end, many of our parents and many of us remember the days when the Social Security was an individual contract for a retirement account, and it was an individual retirement account in a numbered bank account. And you notice that lately bank accounts all seem to have nine digits the same way a Social Security number has. And so what happens is that there came a point with which the slight hint of nobility of this, meaning that there actually was a hint at one time, but the biggest point was that the government had just come through a horrible financial crisis that was precipitated by offshore money people that were using it to seek to control or manipulate the U.S. government into filing bankruptcy. And what happened was is that they even took Mr. Winston Churchill aside many years earlier and explained how they wanted him to handle the worldwide festivities over in Europe and the games with Adolf, et cetera. They told him exactly how the war would come out, and they exactly how the Second World War would come out. And they pointed out that they were going to collapse the American economy and that they had been quietly propping up the stock prices so that individuals were leveraging their stock, using it as collateral for loans with the banks. And they indicated that they had started a whole trend in banking about offering not just signature loans, but home loans, business loans, et cetera, that would allow you to use your stock, up to 80% of your stock value as collateral. And up to that time, there hadn't been any seriously large ripples, and if there was a ripple, it was moderate, and that 20% margin gave them the ability to, and the time to, if necessary, foreclose on the stock and or your home or your business or whatever the unsecured loan was, were able to get on that. But what happened was by inflating these stocks and allowing Americans to get drunk on the leverage, they got to the place where they could pull out their currency so that now their original target was between 12 and 18% was to have the stock market upside down, meaning that if they paid everybody out and everybody off, and that there would be 12 to 18% that couldn't pay out and that the banks couldn't pay out. They actually got up to 29%, which had nothing to do with the year that they decided to crash the stock market or the closeness of it there. And what happened was that when they pulled out all of their money, now there was individuals saw the prices of the stock falling and plummeting, and they couldn't people couldn't get their money out fast enough, and they went to the banks and the stock market. The quicker people pulled their money out, the more the prices began to decline, and now their loans were upside down, and the banks, to protect what little assets they had remaining, closed their doors. America has just come through this, and what happened was is that by the incentives of encouraging everyone to participate in a retirement program, it gave them the ability to either not pay out or actually have your assets paid in so that it would allow them to manage them at their behest and still have some margin for functionality before America declared bankruptcy in 1933. And even after that, they were still using that as a margin. Now, what happened was eventually individuals started encouraging legislators and lobbying to have them consider allowing benefits for other needy individuals that had never paid in, nor none of their family members had paid in, or anyone with a fiduciary beneficiary to that individual to pay in. And When the moment that happened, they had to create a way to commingle all the funds from those accounts, and hence we see everything now going into the general fund, and you no longer have the individual retirement accounts that that you and most of us and even my parents, with the contract they signed for my socialist insecurity, I mean my Social Security number, was that there was a retirement account, and it was an individual account. And there are some individuals that have still, because that was a contract, they have pressed the issue, and they've asked for the payout of the proceeds, not the way the Social Security Administration currently does, because that's a the law, and they say, well, that's the law. Well, it's a ex post facto law, and I don't know if any of you ever read the Constitution. I was thinking about doing it myself, but I've heard there's something about ex post, no such thing as a ex post facto law. I could be mistaken. I might have missed something, but for those individuals that had the contract before then, that contract is not null and void. I'm going to pause for a moment just to get something to drink. Now, what happens is that some people say, well, they'd like to close out their account. Unless you actually can close out and withdraw everything that you put in to you, you know, that you deposited back to you, there are federal laws that prevent them from anybody from closing or deleting a Social Security account. The moment one red cent is paid into it, there is a fiduciary responsibility of the U.S. government and any agency or agent of any agency that attempts to delete that. Because I've had a lot of people say, well, John, I've had my Social Security number rescinded or deleted. Well, okay, that's quite a noble and pleasant thought, but there's some federal statutes that directly apply that threaten federal employees if they do anything with that. It's a felony in the second degree, because anyone that has a fiduciary responsibility in the U.S. government cannot do anything to damage or destroy the documentation or the fiduciary that account that's there. To that end, once you've made if there's a penny of deposit, and now because that deposit was made after, some of that was made after 1981 or somewhere between 1981 and 83, now it's actually impossible to uncommingle that, and I'll just leave it at that. We don't have enough time on this call or two additional calls to fully explain that. But what's happening is that you cannot close that account, but the account number will still exist. It still is tagged to your name, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are some people, like my son, who does not have a Social Security number. It was never applied for at his birth, and we encourage a lot of homeschool families to not get Social Security numbers for their children. We encourage them to not get birth certificates for their children, because a birth certificate and a marriage license was originally part of legislation back in the mid-1800s, where it allowed individuals from owned by two separate properties to be joined together, slaves, but the property or the product of that was property of the state. And when you have a marriage license, that's the reason that they can probate your assets in the event of a death of one of the partners or both, and that's why they can take one up to one-third as through the taxation process there. And that's also why your children, when you get a certificate of live birth or the birth certificate, why they now, Child Protective Services has jurisdiction over that child more so than you do. Previous to the times of requiring a marriage license and birth certificate, births, deaths, marriages, et cetera, were all recorded for almost 200 years in Family Bible. And we still encourage that. And when an individual's born, we encourage them to use as much as possible midwives unless we suspect a crisis pregnancy. And what happens is that I mean, if you don't have any midwives, you know, or you have a midwife crisis, then you use a doctor and you have a doctor standing by. But what happens is that however that child comes into the world, we don't want a regular hospital automatically filling out a Social Security application and sometimes the doctors signing it, which is illegal. They claim they have a fiduciary responsibility, and I've found multiple cases where doctors or nurses actually sign the application for that child's Social Security number, and there are three nurses and two doctors at one facility in the Houston area that can no longer practice medicine ever again since 1997 because they have a federal court injunction and judgment against them because they forged Social Security paperwork and signature on the Social Security paperwork. Now, did they rescind the Social Security number that was issued? No. They haven't got to that, and they refuse to, and it's gone up through U.S. District Court, through the District Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court's refused to hear that to date. That same case is still pending. At this juncture, what happens is that that number will follow you and follow you and follow you. There's individuals who believe that Social Security number is a potentially part of an upcoming enumeration. And to that end, some people say that the Social Security numbers they say you can't get a driver's license without it, etc. There's something called 5 USC 552. It's 5 USC 552, and it's the Privacy Act of 1974, and it was codified into law, Section 7 of the Privacy Act under 552, and it says, to wit, it shall be unlawful for any federal, state, or local government agency to deny any individual any right, benefit, privilege, or privilege provided by law of such individual's refusal to disclose his Social Security account number. And that's Section 7A1. For those of you who are not with ink, pen, or laptop and typing those numbers down, I'll repeat them again in just a moment. But you can also get the recording. Martin explained how to get the recording at the beginning of the call there. But that's Section 7 of the Privacy Act, and it's found at 5 USC 552A, and it's Section 7A1. Now, there's other parts of the the Privacy Act that exclude government agencies that used numbers before 1974, or Tax Reform Act of 1976 under 42 U.S.C. 405(c)(2)(CE1). It exempts the state and federal agencies from that restriction to the extent Social Security numbers are used in the administration of any tax. Okay, general public assistance, driver's license, and motor vehicles laws and its jurisdiction. So what happens is that we find that the when an individual is filing for certain government benefits or the recognition of certain skill sets and for licenses, for professional licenses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That they there is a handful of difficulties that go with that that require individuals to supply their social security number. Now, we have cases where even the State Department has been forced under an IRS code to require everybody's social security number on their passport. Now, presently, there's two individuals in the state of Texas this week that both got driver's licenses without using a social security number. We've supplied them with a declaration that goes something like this. I believe an intelligent designer of what we call planet Earth, on however you choose to refer to him, in all the historical accounts of either religious or non-religious texts, the only account that appears to have any significant accuracy is the Hebrew or Judeo-Christian writings of either the Torah or the Bible. Furthermore, in the book of Revelation, chapter 13, verses 1 through 18, it speaks about a vicious evil beast that caused everyone to receive an enumeration or mark with which he can or she can buy or sell. And that per Revelation chapter 14, verses 9 through 12, it explains that no one who has any part in this enumeration can have any part in heaven and is destined to eternal torment and fiery destruction. And to that end, I believe that the Social Security system is the forerunner of this upcoming enumeration, and that and because of that, I can no longer participate in the system, and I feel I have a higher responsibility to God and man. And even if the Social Security system was not optional, I still could not participate in it because of the aforementioned. And respectfully and regrettably, I need to share with you that this form number for my driver's license in this block, the only answer that I can give is non-applicable religious objector. And that is the one thing, if you, before the Most High King, truly believe in an intelligent designer of this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home, then that is your out for not having to use it for a state identification card, state driver's license. We just had two people that just got their air conditioning master's license in the state of California that did not use a social security number on their license. We have four individuals that all four children of the same mother and father in Orange, California, that just applied for a bank account at Great Western Savings, the successor of that one, which currently is Chase, and they got bank accounts without Social Security number. Per the Patriot Act, it does not say that they're required to have a Social Security number. It says they may use a Social Security number or a number like it, and the bank will arbitrarily assign an arbitrary number similar to the Social Security number. So what happens is that these youngsters, all four of them, all got their bank accounts. They don't have Social Security numbers. They signed an affidavit saying that they didn't have any. And with that declaration, the bank manager at first was asking them to leave, and The mother pulled out a printed copy of 5 U.S.C. 552A and showed him that it should be unlawful, et cetera, and pointed out that the bank did not have the authority, the jurisdiction to refuse. So we're going to see how long those bank accounts last that they got. I have currently a experimental project going with a bank in the Texas area called Wood Forest Bank, where I'm quietly working with their legal department, that they have been extremely, extremely reluctant to even say what or why they're wanting to close my account with them. And I've written multiple letters saying, hey, look, we've got this 5 U.S.C. 552 that at this juncture where I'm having some difficulty with understanding what legal basis you have, so that I don't, and I actually wrote this, put this in writing, I says, so that I don't actually have to sue you in federal court for a criminal violation of the Privacy Act, could you please tell me under what federal statute you're requiring my Social Security number and are attempting to close my account without the Social Security number. And at this juncture, they've become a little more pliable, and they haven't started responding to phone calls yet, but we've had little text back and forth, at least not the legal department. The vice president that originally opened my account there, I may have been, at the time I was just seeking to cash a check that had a fairly significant number of zeros between some whole number and the decimal place to the right. And she says, would you like to start an account? And I said, certainly. Yeah, thank you. Okay, we'll do that. And she set it all up, and a month or two later, all of a sudden, I started getting fan mail saying, you know, we need your socialist insecurity number. And some people say, John, you've cracked that joke a couple of times. Why do you call it socialist insecurity? Well, I'll take a sidebar note and share that with you for a moment. Originally, the contract was for you to have the beguilement was to set you up with an individual retirement account. The beguilement was for the purpose of gaining access to more money so that they could manage it to help manage the deficit that the government had, because they weren't not yet into printing unlimited amounts of cash, renting it from the Federal Reserve System under a agreement that was made at Jekyll Island back in 1909 and 1913. What happened was is that now they're using that originally was their money, but now it's all in one single fund so that they can share the wealth with others who didn't work for or contribute to it, and they're trying to level the playing field by taking from the rich and giving to the poor. I mean, from those who have paid in and et cetera, and now are even not just funding widows and orphans that are legitimate U.S. citizens, but individuals that are foreign nationals. And wow, that almost sounds like socialism. You know, everybody contributes to the public trust, and then we take care of everybody regardless of their performance. So they don't have a motivation to contribute because they're already getting. And many of you probably remember just recently after COVID-19 hit that many of the employees that were furloughed during COVID-19 were paid a stipend by the government while they were unemployed due to the COVID-19. Well, many of those individuals didn't want to go back to work because they got, actually, in some cases, they were taking home more on the government dole than they were taking home when they were working. and now they didn't have to work. And they're that right now employment skyrocketed since CV-19, and it's injured a lot of industry and done a lot of damage to the U.S. economy. But what's happened is that to cover this, almost 26% of the overage of the national debt and that new funding bill that they just passed into office to cover the so they prevent the shutdown is going to cover payments for Social Security. And so if anybody who studied socialism thinks that there is a some vague parallel or semblance to that, oops, holy key, little Batman, this is exactly socialism. And and it's there to satisfy the insecurity of those who choose not to work or will not work. Or it's not there to satisfy the needs of those who have worked, that have paid in. They don't care about the – well, I shouldn't say that. Those people are starting to become insecure about the what's happening – what happened to their funds over the last – since 1981, those individuals of the last 42 years have become insecure very much four times when certain legislation threatened that if we didn't have some funds to bail out the deficit, then the national and the main account that they were going to stop, or there was going to be a cessation or reduction in Social Security benefits because of the socialism that, or the acts, the socialist acts that were occurring. So if you hear the joke socialist insecurity, you know, just ask yourselves, think about it. And you may find yourself cracking the same bad joke. I apologize for the crassness of that joke. Please forgive me. I thank you for your forgiveness in advance on that. Meantime, the one exception that we have found for, like, when you get your driver's license or your state ID, there, if you are able to explain to them that this, you're a religious objector, and you once again, you can get the recording from, you know, Michael, and both Martin and Michael can tell you and have told you how to get it, so that you know which, you know, some of the references that we talk about, like Revelation chapter 13 verses 1 through 18, and Revelation 14 verses 9 through 12, and Matthew 24 verses 9 through 33, etc. They, if you're able to go over those, and you believe that in that you what that this applies to you, and what you're reading is true, be prepared to be questioned. All four of those children were questioned while they were filling out the bank application paperwork, even though they don't have a Social Security number. They were questioned. The two people that just got the air conditioning licenses in California, the Bureau of Licensing, they have access to, and they knew both of them had Social Security numbers issued. But when they said that, when it was very, very clear, and they used the exact term that my parents unwittingly registered me for the optional Social Security number, and I can no longer participate in that system because I have a higher responsibility to God, not man. And even if the Social Security number was not optional, I could still not participate because of the aforementioned. They and that they both of them got questioned. One of them was in San Mateo County in Central California. The other was in Los Angeles County in Southern California. And they both got questioned. One of them, Mike said he was there for over 45 minutes just getting questioned about his commitment to the Most High King. And the person that was at the Bureau of Licensing there in Southern California asked for his phone number when he got it. He says, it's on the application. He says, and he says, well, is this your cell phone or your, well, no, that's the business phone. He says, could I have your cell phone? He says, it's not required on the application. Why could you possibly want that? He says, because I want what you apparently already have. And that's what you're talking about, a relationship with the real God. He says, I've been a churchgoer for over 30 some odd years. And he said, I don't know who God really is. And I see you do. And he says, we need to, if you let me have time, we need to talk. I need your help. And, he ended up by finishing issuing him his, master's license for HVAC. Presently there are people on this call that, we've been preparing documentation so they can get state ID. There's people on this call that we've been, preparing, and there are people in this call that already have State Department ID that doesn't have a Social Security number attached to it. The State Department was held hostage 2.5 years ago by the IRS and through the Attorney General's Office, the federal prosecutor. They said that, look, it's a $10,000 fine if somebody doesn't use a Social Security number on their U.S. passport application, their DS-11. Yet you guys have been letting them do it. I've been working with people for over 46 years to get passports without Social Security numbers on them, and they cut that off. They stopped it dead in the water 2 years ago, last January. And for almost 9 months, 8.5, 9 months, nobody got a single passport without having a Social Security number on it. Yet when it came time for my wife, my son, and I to renew ours, and explained what was happening. Individuals with the Passport Agency, Passport Bureau, that State Department that we've been familiar with for many, many years, knowing the help that we were giving individuals, said, John, look, let's talk about this. And we sat down and worked through it. We were 3.5, almost 4 days late getting to a wedding event in Cancun because we were didn't have our passports thing taken care of. But we got through the situation, and with her help, we realized that they realized that we were absolutely honest. And I told them, I says, look, if I need to pay the $10,000 fee, I'll just pay it, you know. My commitment to the Most High King says that I've got to stop using that number. I didn't tell them about some other mitigating circumstances also within our government, individuals within our government that said that I'm to never use it ever again. And I didn't call them up, those people up, and get them involved. I wanted to see if I could handle it without playing that trump card. And we did. We only played the I'm a servant of God card. And to that end, we had an 11-year-old little boy from Santa Ana, California, at the Los Angeles Passport Office there at 2800 there up in northern L.A. And the passport agent or the State Department agent says, you realize there's a $10,000 fine, young man. And the father immediately intervened, and they asked him to please step aside. And they said, you can't question my son without me being present. And the lady just smiled and says, would you like your son to possibly get his passport or not? And he stepped aside, and she began to question him about his commitment to God, and he answered all the questions about Revelations and Matthew and everything else and a bunch of others. And finally she says, okay, how do you want to handle the $10,000 fine? And he says, I need to talk to my daddy. He says, why? He says, well, he says, I have a newspaper route, but I got to figure out how many months or how many years it's going to take for me to pay this off. I'm told the State Department agent cried. That young man got his passport that day. They believed him. He was a stand-up. His 14-year-old sister got hers that day also. She was at a different window. Didn't get questioned or grilled quite so bad, but the parents telling me about what was going on in their 11-year-old, it shocked me. The lady, the State Department agent, had to step away from the window for over 3 minutes to compose herself because she was crying. But that young man, when it came time, they got a 1 o'clock appointment, one of the first appointments, to come pick up his passport. Social Security number is what the IRS uses also to levy and collect income tax. For those individuals who don't have a Social Security number, consequentially, they don't seem to be responsible for, or there isn't a requirement for them to pay the income tax. And to that end, a lot of individuals that presently are contesting the IRS, issues there. There's under 26 U.S.C. 6203, the first three words of that statute are to any person liable. And what it happens is that, and we can this will be topic for a separate call, but there we're finding out that the IRS doesn't pretty much know who, all, and why they're prosecuting a lot of individuals by asking thought-provoking questions, and we have a path that we take down this so that they generate a pattern of and a history of not knowing. It's an 18 to 36-month process. Presently, our chain of individuals that are in the process is full. The information providers that are working with that are exactly at saturation right now. If you want to participate in that process, the object is we use what's called a clean hands doctrine here at Americans Restoring America. We do not stop paying income tax, quite the opposite. Sometimes we even overpay just a little bit. But what happens is that we start a process by which you have absolutely clean hands, and we finish up with the documentation after 18 to 36 months with you either having a letter from the IRS that says we agree you're not required to file 1040 or an agreed to court order that says either you and or in a couple of cases your descendants to perpetuity are not required to file a 1040 or pay income tax. And if you're interested in that program, I don't know how long the line is right now, but you can talk to Michael. I don't affiliate with, I don't take care of any of the housekeeping in the day to day. As Michael pointed out, my job is, the law and the litigation. What happens is that certain aspects of the Social Security number, when you become an American national, even though you may have signed up for an unconscionable contract, which, oh, Wait a minute, John. You just used the term unconscionable contract. If I remember right, in my law days, that's grounds for a null voiding of the contract. Yeah. Funny you should bring that up. You're absolutely right. And that's another of the grounds for the cessation of the requirement for the account. But for those of us who are over the age 23, and I'll tell you, it was murder turn 23. I don't know what I'm going to do when I hit 26. But for some of us who are over 23, some of us are starting to get a little tuckered out. And it's not just because we're farmers. You know, for farmers, they say the average farmer gets 40 seasons to farm, and then they're too wore out, or that horse is so worn out that it needs to be put out to pasture. I don't mean put down. I said put out to pasture, allowed to graze and enjoy some of the fruits of the spice of life. Well, what happens is that some of us are looking forward to collecting a little bit of that Social Security. Right now, there's a handful of individuals that are collecting it, but they're doing it through a court order on the old contract, and they're not paying income tax on it. If you want to become part of that program, once again, you need to contact Michael and work with him on that. And it depends on which information provider you'll end up with. And that's another thing. The information providers here, when Michael assigns a information provider or you request one, and an opening comes up in that particular information provider schedule to take your particular request in, and I'll be honest with you, issues like all of a sudden having a criminal prosecution befall you versus a voluntary extrication from the 1040 system. those criminal drop-ins are given precedence. And I think everyone would agree that if you have all of a sudden you get befalled with a criminal prosecution, you would like some grace granted on the information provider's time to assist you in your prosecution, and that optional programs would be prioritized behind you. And as most of you probably firmly believe that, that's you're probably in concert with Michael and everybody at ARA, America's Restoring America. So sometimes I'll be very honest with you. 1040 packages sometimes take a second or a third seat in priority to the when somebody's facing criminal prosecution either at a local, county, state, or maybe U.S. District Court level. There's a clock and a calendar on those. And they have to be taken care of very quickly. Otherwise, individuals lose their liberty. And so to that end, while the best efforts will be given absolutely to maintain forward motion on all of those. Now, one thing that's a good point is that during the process, if they take a little bit longer or a lot of bit longer in responding and the process slows down from the 18-month to the point where it runs closer to the 36-month, the preponderance of the weight of evidence that we have against them is so much greater that actually running a little bit slow on the 1040 system extrication packages, that's something that is not a bad thing at all. And and I'll tell you, I had a conference call with a federal prosecutor today that he was indicating that there was some question about whether his client, the IRS, was interested about not pursuing this in court, but settling out of court. And this couple just filed this like 4 months ago. They've made three continuances, motion for continuances, through this prosecutor, this DAG, Deputy DAG, D-A-G, Deputy Attorney General, and he indicated today that they were possibly not interested in pursuing it, that he wanted to know what kind of agreement they could come to settle out of court. Now, I had another conference call yesterday with another federal prosecutor for, coincidentally, one of our students, and this one all of a sudden went from very frosty and unkind and very imposing to almost pliable and helpful. And actually, she gave us some answers to some things that I myself have been interested in learning, and she just spouted them off, just rolled off her tongue. And it's she says, "No, I'm not trying to be helpful, and I can't be helpful, and I'm just answering your questions about this, this, and that." And she was being helpful the whole time, And it was amazing. We've got three more sessions coming up in the next 14 months on Social Security. We've just started to touch the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more to go. My time has come to close. I'm actually a little bit over. And so I'm going to return you back to Michael for Q&A. If you can refrain to the subject matter topic this evening, that would be very pleasant and most beneficial to you, our fellow audience and students. If you're not able to, we'll try to answer whatever questions you have on whatever topic you're rendering. With that, thank you for the honor and the privilege of allowing me to serve you this evening. Back to you, Martin. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very much. I'd like you to know, Brother John, that Johnny Ringo has joined us this evening. So that's going to be a pleasure. And, ladies and gentlemen, I hope I had not offended anyone at the beginning of this call when I was talking about cattle and horses being properly branded, and then even suggesting that you're just a piece of meat to the United States government, that you're property in a franchise of the United States. I wouldn't want to offend anybody by that thought, but there it is. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll see to the center right of your monitor a place to, looks like a rectangle laying on its side, a silhouette. Left click into that, type away your comment or your question. And then underneath there is a place to put your name, some other information, hit submit. Then that pops up on my end, and I'm happy to give voice to your comment or your question. Well, the first hand raised is Johnny Ringo. Ta-da!
Hey, I'll be your Huckleberry.
There you go.
How are you doing, my honored brother?
On this application for a U.S. passport, there are several different types of applications, because I went through this process numerous times. And there is an application that is a gold color. And the application number is ES11A0920132*. And on there, you do not have to issue your Social Security number. And I believe that is the only application that applies to that. The others, you do. But I have used this application numerous times. And it is when you go in to the post office to request an application, you request the gold color. They're very reluctant to give you this type of application. But if you are very persistent and rather dominating, they will cough it up. And this type of application does not require a Social Security number. So just a little tidbit of information.
Well, okay, Johnny Ringo, could you text Michael with that form number? Because I'm looking at the gold one right now, and I the electronic online gold one, and the DS-11, and I've been using what is the DS-11C, and you used a, you said that there's a different OMB control number, and for
it's
that
a DS-11.
DS-11 what?
DS-11A 0920132 star.
And
it's
is
an
what's the alpha character? What's the alpha character after 11?
A.
A is an alpha.
A is an apple.
Okay, A is an apple. Okay. Because, yeah, I'm very, very much interested in, because presently, recently, the only DS-11s that have been available for the last, I think, 41 months are gold, but they're the DS-11C. I have not seen any of the others available. Do you remember the old blue ones and the old remember the old gray ones and the orange ones?
Do.
They're
right.
They're not available anymore. They haven't been available for a while, and now they're all gold. And if you go, at least the ones I've found, but if you think that there's another one available, I am going to search and research that out to find if that's the case.
Okay, as Apple, they're very reluctant to furnish it in the post office when you go where I go to get it. But if you're persistent and rather dominating, they do cough it up. But like I say, they don't like to. For what reason, I don't know. But on there, it does not require a Social Security number. And other information, pertinent information, and like I say,
because
I traveled throughout the Mideast and various countries over there, and they're very reluctant.
Because Block 5 of the DS-11, the ones that I've found lately. And I could be mistaken. The Block 5 all require the Social Security number, but we've gotten past that. I think when the IRS drew, they may have, when they clamped down on the State Department, they threatened the director with prosecution, not just their agents, but the director with prosecution and a $10,000 fine each. And that was 2 years ago, January 1st. And so have you seen this since January 1st?
This application? Yeah, I got it right in front of me right now.
You got it right in could you scan that and send it to Michael so that when I go look for this, that maybe that'll help me find it a little better? If you could scan that and send that in, Johnny,
I'll send them the application because I have no intentions of traveling to the Middle East anymore, and because of the conflict. But I can send them the whole application, no problem.
There's other foreign countries you can. Johnny, there's other foreign countries you can travel to, you know, like Texas.
Buddies down there in New Mexico and Montana, but they're kind of flighty nowadays. They call them militias down there. And when we do have contact with Homeland Security, gets rather nervous. And they don't mess with us guys anymore up here. They learned their lesson. But that's another subject for another day.
Understood. It's good to hear your voice, brother.
Yeah. I like to listen to you guys. You're very informative, and it's a pleasure, and I enjoy it. So,
oh, shucks, Ma.
You guys take care.
And you as well, my honored brother. Take care. Back to you, Michael.
Before you get off the line, I just want to recap this number. A as in Apple, 0920132*.
That is correct.
All right. Thank you so much. Again, let's go to next question. Press *2 on your keypad. Let me check Freedom's Radio while you think about raising your hand there. Refresh on Freedom's Radio. No questions there. Come back to the call. Nicholas, are there any conversations that you could have with John at this time without being specific?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out. I believe I have some important stuff to get done before the trial commences coming up.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
well, I didn't know if we could cover any of it tonight.
We're going to try to cover Nicholas in the morning. And
okay.
We're going to Nicholas, what's the earliest that you could possibly cut out 20 or 30 minutes for me? Earliest your time. Arizona time.
Probably around 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock Arizona time. I'm currently in Eastern Standard Time, so that'd be 8 o'clock my time. You want to ink that in?
8 o'clock your time?
Yep, 8 o'clock my time, 6 a.m. your time.
Sounds good.
Okay, Michael, you okay with that?
Do I have a choice?
like they say in Texas, oil well.
At least it's not one of your 3 a.m. in the mornings.
Hey, I didn't plan that, you know.
maybe two would be okay, but, you know, 4 or 5,
no,
6, 8, 10.
I never planned those. Those were, what do I say here?
Say anything at all. The hole's already dug. All right, ladies and gentlemen, press *2 on your keypad, or we're going to say nighty-night. And now I'm going to have to go to bed early. Going once.
Hey.
Going twice. Check Freedom's Radio, and then we'll hit 3. Hold on 1 second. All right, that's *3. Oh, Jim, he just picked up here. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello, Brother John. Hello, Michael. Good evening. How are you, gentlemen, tonight?
Hey, how are you doing, Jim from Arizona?
doing fantastic. Thanks for asking. Brother John, I texted Michael a question earlier. I've been studying some information on Trading with the Enemy Act and the executive order, I believe it's 2039 of March 6, 1933. And in that process, I'm having a little bit of a challenge distinguishing whether or not the Constitution was suspended under some form of an emergency or war powers that the president has the authority to enforce. Can you perhaps elaborate on how we might be affected today by that act in 1933?
Jim, it was later ruled on by the U.S. Supreme Court that the Constitution could not be suspended because the very act of suspends the authority to suspend it. And then, therefore, the moment the Constitution is suspended, the president no longer has any authority. nobody does. So it's one of those go back in time and kill your father, and then, you know, supposedly erases you, but because it erased you, you couldn't go back in time to kill your father. So it's, you can't get there from here. It's just, it's something that cannot, the suspension of the Constitution cannot exist, because then it's technically lawlessness, that they call it military law. However they slice it, they are not able to. And what happened was that it was, the attempt to suspend it was later ruled as unconstitutional. And the EWPA, the Emergency War Powers Act, is something that every president in the last 4 years, that one of the first acts they coming into office is they reaffirm and declare an act of war with somebody. Some individuals, this is, might be considered embarrassing. I'm not saying this is actually happening. But if it was actually happening, it might be pretty bizarre. But if there was something called the Emergency War Powers Act, it would require for the president to issue executive orders. It would require a state of emergency and a state of war, and that the president would not have the authority, because the Emergency War Powers Act is what gives the president the authority to issue EOs, executive orders. And if there was no state of emergency or state of war, then the president couldn't issue those. So there may be case, if that was the case and a president wanted to keep the authority to issue EOs, he might be first thing into office declaring a state of war or reaffirming a state of war with somebody, so that he could exercise that authority under the Emergency War Powers Act. Now, I'm not saying that's actually happening, and, you know, and gosh, that would be a travesty and a crime. Oh, wait a minute. How many presidents in the last 44 years have not issued executive orders? And how was that possible that they're able to take advantage of a privilege or a function that is only authorized under the Emergency War Powers Act?
They must be acting outside of their oath of office?
No, it's all within their oath of office. It's all legally within their oath of office. Is, you wonder if there's, you wonder why we've continued to always have a conflict going somewhere else, when all of a sudden something expires. Now, I'm not saying that the Tonkin Gulf issue was completely precipitated for that, but it might have been embellished a little bit to help precipitate and maintain all those Southeast Asian games. But, or somebody who believes in conspiracies might suggest that it was embellished or magnified to precipitate and continue the Southeast Asian games, and now the Middle Eastern games might be precipitated by other things, but a conspiracy theorist might suggest that. I'm not, but a conspiracy theorist might.
Weren't you one of those that used to conspire?
I may not be a conspiracy theorist. I may be a former conspirer. Don't worry, it's much worse than you think. But I was never part of a field operations group. In fact, you know, we've gone too far down that rabbit hole.
So when FDR issued his order to, that all citizens turn in their gold, I mean, obviously there was a major crisis when you, well, you know, if you look at the history, or at least the history I've read, is that that people were going to the banks, pulling their gold out, and because of that, it created a national emergency. because the banks were overcommitted. Not the word I'm actually looking for, but they were they did not have the gold to give back to everybody, and so it created a national emergency. Of course, the Americans were claimed to be hoarding gold when it was their property to hold and possess. I don't understand that, but anyway, so I guess my question is, when he issued this executive order and then the subsequent act to abrogate the gold clause followed in June of 33, how is it that those events, you know, change the way that we do business, that the obligations are those of the United States?
Now, let me ask you a question. Are you referring to the fact that those events were precipitated to go from currency that had an intrinsic value to fiat currency?
Yes, exactly.
Well, to go into that all the way, that's, you know, we might have to do an evening call. Just mm-hmm. we did one on intrinsic currency and fiat currency about 2.5 years ago. We might mm-hmm. have to
dig that one out of the archives and give you a week off.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we might have to go dig that one up again, because there's a lot of background we have to lay, and I wasn't planning on getting back into that till February of 25 is when I was scheduling the fiat currency versus intrinsic currency. It's a three-part series, and it was scheduled for the last 3 weeks in February of 25. We might move that one forward.
Okay. It just looked like a topic that I've just been doing a lot of research on it recently, and obviously there's a lot of resistance anytime you bring this up, that all obligations are U.S. obligations. So anyway, we've got some people that we're working with all over here that we're introducing this as a form of a defense or offense, however you want to look at it. I'll just continue to do my studies in the meantime.
Yeah. By the way, Pammy sends her love and says she still appreciates all that hard work you did for her all those years ago, and that you you made all the difference for her, and that she and Dr. John, they are unbelievably, incredibly appreciative of you, and she sends her love.
They are amazing people, and the fact that you all get to spend time together has just got to be a really special time for you. So I'm grateful that you guys had the opportunity to visit with one another.
Yeah, she showed me a lot of what you helped prepare and what you did for her, and she gave me the 40,000 foot, and you earned a new level of respect in my heart. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Very kind.
Well, you're the one that was very kind. Helping them out at that time when they were in that deep and that serious, at the way you did, is extremely honorable of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Okay, John?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm at 5 USC, 5521. It's called
no. Oh, okay, excuse me, go ahead. 5521?
That's what you said, didn't you?
No, 552. 5 USC, 552.
Okay.
And,
A1.
It's actually small letter A. And the subsection is 7, parentheses, small letter A.
Wait a minute. Let me find 7.
If you like, I can send you a there's a DOJ publication or review of the Privacy Act of 74 that I could probably send you. So if we have anybody that wants just an overview, that you know what, I'm gonna
right,
see if I can
seven.
Pull that up right now.
That's seven. Each agency shall A, establish a system, blah blah. What's after A?
7A1.
Okay. I have 7A, then it goes to 7B. I don't
okay.
have a 7A. I have a 7B1.
Okay. Hold on a second. I'm looking up to see if I've got the that. Okay. You know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to send you a copy of the Privacy Act, and I'm going to see if I can send you I'll send you a couple of resources try to see if I can there's one hold on there's one document here, let me look, I'm trying to see if I can find it. Oh boy. I may have to dig for this. It's, I thought I had one that was very, candid and succinct. There's a well, hang on a second. I'm just gonna see if I've got the. I'm gonna read this off to you, and if you want to enter it, www.justice. Hold on a second. .gov/OPCL /social security number usage social-security -number-usage
# or number
Dash. Oh, social security number spelled out, N-U-M-B-E-R, dash usage.
All right, now that's a hyphen or an underscore?
Hyphen.
Okay. Anything after that, HTML or anything?
Actually, you know what? I'm going to enter this right now, and I'm just going to I'm going to pull it up. I'm just going to see if I can pull it up right now. I'm just going to go to the DOJ, and I'm going to go with Social Security number usage.
All right, this came up overview of the Privacy Act of 1974.
Yes. Okay. You found it. That's it.
Yep.
Yes. That is exactly it. Okay. Yeah. What is it? About 5 pages long?
It doesn't. It just continues to scroll. It says Section 7 of the Privacy Act, found at 5 U.S.C. Section 5.
You've got it. You've got it. Send that out to everyone that asked for it. there's that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you another, let's see, let me, I'm going to send you another handout here, the Privacy Act of 1974, and it's just going to be, and between these two, you should be able, anybody that has a question, go ahead and check your email now. Go ahead and press the magic button to send
receive. I got you. Got it.
Okay. Okay. Anybody that asks for the Privacy Act, those two documents, and by the way, there's an experiment that is currently happening with Bank of America. There was a test account set up, and with that one document, the overview of the Privacy Act of 1974, with that document exclusively, they refrained from canceling the account, the experimental account.
Okay.
So, just FYI, that's pretty powerful.
I got it.
Okay. Then Jim, or did you have anything else, or?
No, on this issue here that you're discussing, though, does this only apply to, now it sounds like you're talking about that this applies to corporations, including banks. When I've read this and I've read some of it, I've taken it to mean that it has to do with federal, state, and local agencies or other, you know, departments of the government. Am I missing something?
No, this, the Privacy Act right here predominantly applies to the individual, the aggregate individual. I have not used this in a corporate environment at all.
Okay. All right. For instance, if I'm trying to clear up a credit report and somebody at the credit report or consumer reporting agency states that they need the social in order to verify identification, you're saying that they are within their right to ask for that information. And
well,
if I refuse to give it to them under this statute, Public Law 93-579, that they can still require it. And if I don't provide it to them, they're not going to verify my. I can't do anything on that report.
Well, that's a good question, Jim. Now, a lot of the credit reporting agencies, they've dropped back to using the social security number exclusively. So if they've already got it and they've already got the data with that and they've connoted it all with it, most of the individuals that I know that do credit cleanup are putting up with the fact that to get that single event done, there isn't an easy way to clean up that report without that information. And so what's happening is that at that juncture they're just using the account number that they've already got so they can find the data. Many of them aren't going quite that far. They're able to use the name and the birthday and get the information that way. But then the credit agencies have been saying, you could use it. You could find anybody's name and birthday, but social security number is not that common. So we're using that as a credential to certify that we're actually talking to the real person. Just ask them as nicely as possible. What else can we do to possibly sort out the affirmation that this is the person and these, that the data that you're holding, they no longer are using a social security number. And, you know, we talked about a little bit of the, background data on, why they, can, could, or should not use the social security number or claim the exemption from using it. We talked about that this evening, but, credit reporting agency, technically, they're not allowed to use a social security number. They do it, but they're not allowed to. The individual that they're reporting on, we'd have to find out if they ever gave them permission to use that, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. But when you're in a position where you're trying to clear up credit report and they require that, it's kind of like the gatekeeper, that if you don't provide that information, they're not going to let you pass, like I say, the gatekeeper. So typically they require copies of a driver's license, for example, or maybe a social security card, or there's a list of other things that you can provide, such as a utility bill. You know, those types of things. But all of those things are disclosure, very, very private information that we're trying to control, that these information providers somehow obtain, and then they unfortunately use it to our detriment.
You understand when a person is being, you've ever heard the term trafficked?
Absolutely, sure.
Okay. Would unauthorized use of your social security number be considered being trafficked?
I don't see why it wouldn't. We've got a case in Wisconsin right now we're working on that we bring up that issue that someone, a debt collector, had obtained some information that they weren't entitled to possess. And so we've challenged them on multiple fronts for their authorities and credentials to have this information. And, you know, now there's a little bit of protection by the gavel that's telling us that that they don't have to show their authority for having this information, which we disagree with, but that's kind of where we're at in that case. But so,
yeah, there's what you do is you file an immediate 42 USC 1983 complaint against that individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's that's something that we would there's a lot of other. We can go into the trafficking laws, which makes it an automatic second-degree federal felony. There's a lot of places we can go with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'd be interested in having a conversation with you sometime about that, and also powers and duties of banks, 12 U.S.C. 1431, regarding the application of a when someone takes out utilities, for example, they fill out an application and they have to disclose the social under those circumstances also, or it's requested of them. Perhaps it's an easier out not to provide the social, but as I understand it, when you disclose the social to anybody you're doing business with, that usually means you give them access to that account and they receive, in essence, a financial asset on their books and records, and it's a prepaid account.
You're absolutely correct. None of my utility providers have my social security number. I manage utility provisions for quite a few entities, including churches, schools, There's a bunch of 501c3 organizations, individuals that are missionaries and ministers, private and public clinics that are not-for-profit, self-funded. I manage their electric, and none of them have a Social Security number provided, none of them. And all I did was review 5 USC 552 with the utility companies, and they assigned an arbitrary number. And they did. I asked them, okay, they said, well, we need a tax ID number then. Okay, what tax ID number are you using? Or why do you need a tax ID number? You're not withholding or filing taxes. Okay. And I says, you know, and on one of them, I had the Deputy Attorney General on the phone, and he says, sir, could I have your name? And he asked him why. And he says, well, I need you to contact my office. I'm so-and-so, and I'm a Deputy Attorney General at the D.C. office, and you're asking for things that are illegal to ask for, I'd like to have a further discussion with you, or are you going to cease and desist immediately? And the next day, I got 8 calls, all from this one electrical service provider. They wanted to clarify what the correct procedures were, and David never had to call them back. You know,
well,
but
you have friends in high places,
or friends in low places. You know, or incredibly low places. Actually, here's what's really strange. I didn't know David from Adam. I called him up, and I was explaining to him the issues. And I says, could we do a three-way, you know? And in the time that we were on the phone to the time that we spoke with those folks, that's how we got to know each other. I didn't know him 2 hours before we made that call.
Wow.
So yeah, it's not that I'm anything special, I guess. The only way you could put some of what's happened to me is God's grace strikes again in spite of me. Okay, with that, back
Thank
to you, Michael. Take care, Jim.
Yep.
The Father's blessings be upon you.
Good
evening.
All righty.
Thank you.
Let me check one more time, see if anyone else has raised their hands. Otherwise, we're going to say nighty-night.
Because I have to get up early in the morning.
Yeah, imagine that.
I don't like that. But what we have to do, we have to do. Soldier up. All right.
So
that's it.
You,
John, any parting comments tonight, sir?
Once again, there's an old saying, it says you should know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. No matter how big that dragon looks like in front of you, for those of you who seek to serve the Most High King, and that most of you who know that there is a intelligent designer of this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home, know that the boss is still boss. He's large and in charge. He's sovereign, and there ain't any other rules. Trials only come from two reasons. One, either we screwed up, we worked for it, we earned it, and we deserve it, and buckle up, Spanky, it's coming from downtown. Or that master craftsman is continuing the mighty work in your life. And when I talk to him, that master craftsman or that intelligent designer, there's two things that I ask. And you got to be careful. You got to know whether you screwed up or whether he's continuing that mighty work. So you ask the right question. And my question, if I screwed up, I worked for it, I earned it, deserve it, and buckle up, Spanky, it's coming from downtown, is that, Father in heaven, help me learn what I need to learn as quickly as possible so I can be done with this trial and this character building exercise. And if the other one, if the master craftsman, that intelligent designer, is hard at work and finishing making that perfect specimen that he wants to make, I have a different request. Father in heaven, help me learn what I need to learn as quickly as possible so I can be done with this trial or this character building exercise. It says when all a person's ways please him, he causes even his enemies to live at peace with him. There's make sure you pray the right prayer. Talk to the boss, because you only live, you only last so long here. And some of you have, like me, have a few less shopping days left in front of you than you have behind you. Some of these trials are there for just one reason, for him to get our attention. The moment he's got our attention, then the trials go away. Some of the others are so that we can be an asset and a blessing in somebody's life or to our fellow person through an effort like Americans Restoring America. Know what your place is. Stay in touch with the Most High King and stay the course. The Father's blessings be upon you all. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very much. Till tomorrow night when we will return with Mr. Slevin and his limited liability company. You'll need to see that. It's important. It's all part of the plan. Every call we do, each is an intersect with the other. And we hope that you'll consider joining us for tomorrow night as well. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.